Ozil, Lacazette, Ozil! Arsenal are walking in a winter wonderland! What a turnaround! He's come up with it! The scorpion touch! Olivier Giroud! When you saw Mkhitaryan do it, you say we'd never see it again!
Hi everyone, and welcome to the Cannon Crested Arsenal podcast. This is our third run, and it's already going farther than I thought we would survive. So I want to say thank you to everybody who has listened to us thus far. It's our third recording, and this pod is actually like a monthly podcast where we come together to just talk about how Arsenal has fared in a particular month. So the month in question is February, and then we're recording on the 3rd of March. So anything that you hear on the pod has to be taken in the context, of the fact that we were recording February podcast, and we will still be talking about the Spurs game, the 1-1 draw, or the 1-1 loss yesterday. I'm not recording the pod alone, as always. I have very, very intelligent people with me. I have Ima_Daily on Twitter. Hi, Ima.
Hi, Simon.
Hi, how are you doing?
Absolutely smashing.
Really good stuff. I also have Toby on the pod. Toby Amo. It's always difficult introducing him because his Twitter handle and his name are just exactly the same. So, Toby Amo at Toby Amo. Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me again.
Good. Anytime that we do a transaction and I need to send you money, your name seems funny. Like, everybody just knows you as Toby Amo. It's really cool. But then your bank name is like totally Toby Amo or Mojesu something Kiniko, Kiniko, something like that.
Yeah.
Anyways, good to have you on the pod. Yeah. Mastermind is also on the pod. He has the smartest name here. I hope he's the smartest person on the pod as well. Mastermind, how are you doing? His real name is Adedamola anyway. So in case he doesn't sound
very well,
smart,
thank you.
Just call him Adedamola going forward.
Wow. Okay.
Hello,
Simon.
Hello. Yeah, hi.
Every time,
yeah, hi. Okay, I was gonna ask Toby and
Simon.
Mastermind, has anything happened new in your life in February? Any big achievements? Anything?
Why do you want to know my personal life?
I'm going somewhere.
Why are you so interested in my personal life?
My question is...
Exactly.
Simon, hold on.
Yeah, okay.
So you're the moderator here. And you ask the question. Toby game. And it must be answered. So please, Toby and Mastermind, answer the question.
I'm sorry, I'm not answering that question. I feel the fish.
Okay.
There's
nothing in
Nigeria.
Oh, my name. What I'm going to with the question actually is, after Imadili joined us to record the podcast in the month of January, the podcast covering the month of January, he got a job with a big radio station in Nigeria, and he does sports anchors for them on Saturdays, I think. Ima, right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the point. So how much credit do we get for giving him a platform?
Not only as money must be involved. Not only credit.
Exactly. So how
is money involved? I keep it quiet.
Now you play the fish.
No.
Okay, anyways, I just wanted to say congratulations to Ima on the new job, and obviously we're going to be listening to you on the job, and we are sure you're going to do splendid.
Thank you.
Yeah, all right. We'll just be making sure that you don't sound like Graham Souness and
Paul Merson.
Oh, Paul Merson, the day you do that, do not associate ourselves with you anymore.
Well, I think Graham Souness, Paul Merson, I could do, but I would never be Tim Sherwood.
Better.
Oh, no, Tim Sherwood is absolutely the worst, really. Yeah. So okay, let's just go. I'm sure everybody just didn't come here to hear us chit chat about our lives. But anyways, so just a quick roundup of how Arsenal fared in the month of February. Everybody, I'm sure, had forgotten that we lost to Man City 3-1. You think that game is in January and how far it is now? Well, we lost to Man City 3-1. Yeah. So we beat Huddersfield away. We then travelled all the way to Bate to play Bate. And we lost 1-0. We then hosted Bate at home at the Emirates, and we beat them 3-0 and qualified for the next stage of the Europa League. Then we switched to the Premier League and hosted Southampton at home. We won the game 2-0, and then we played Bournemouth at home as well, and we won the game 5-1. Just because we're recording this game, recording this podcast after the Spurs game, so we're also going to be referring to that game here, so you're going to have to forgive us for that. We lost 1-1 to Spurs, I guess.
Yeah.
Can we say that? It's like a 1-1 loss?
I guess so, because it certainly felt like a loss.
Yeah, it did feel like a loss, even though it's a result that many of us would have taken before the game. But
what
made it worse for you, Toby, since you already started speaking about it, the fact that if we didn't get the penalty at the end to win the game, would it have made you feel better?
No, I think I even felt worse, because they got a dodgy penalty. It was only fair that we get a dodgy penalty ourselves. So even out the inefficient incompetent officiating. But what was the most terrible thing was the fact that we just let the game slip from our hands. We had everything. We had the chances. We defended excellently, apart from just one incident where Mustafi did the Mustafi. And then we should have won that game. We deserved to win that game.
Yeah, we did. So so something we're going to do on the pod as well going forward is just to find out where Arsenal, whose car is that?
Ima.
Get out of your car, Ima. So I'll go back to what I was talking about. Just something we're going to be doing on the pod going forward is we're going to talk about indices and see where Arsenal features on those indices. Like, the team with the most goals in the Premier League right now is Manchester City. They have 76. The team with the most shots on target, Manchester City, they average 6.8. They can take 7 shots on target per game. The team with the most chances created is Manchester City as well. They have 78 thus far. The team with the most missed chances is Manchester City as well. And they've missed 53 of the 78 that they've had. The team with the best attack, obviously, is Manchester City. They score at least 2.6 goals per game. The team with the best defense in the league is Liverpool. They concede just 0.5 goals per game. The team with the most clean sheets, Liverpool, 16. When we're recording, the team with the most active goalkeeper is Arsenal. Leno has to save at least 3.5, or we could just say 4 shots per game. Mm-hmm. Do you want to know how many Manchester gets? Manchester City, 1.6.
Okay.
1.6. Liverpool, 2.1. Tottenham, 3.2. That's Hugo Lloris. Manchester United, David De Gea, 3.3. And Chelsea, 2. So our keeper is the busiest in the entire league. No, in the top 6, not the entire league. There's no point comparing the others.
Okay.
Yeah, so the team with the least missed chances, guess which team is it? Of the top 6, guess. Take a quick guess. Yeah, Arsenal.
Yeah, I'm not exactly surprised.
Yeah, because the point is, because when we always, as Arsenal fans, we see Aubameyang miss a lot of chances. And because we don't watch other teams with the same perspective or the same emotion, when they miss those chances, it doesn't register as much as when we miss. So So for a team like Tottenham, they missed 78% of the big chances that they've created.
Yeah.
Exactly. So
that doesn't excuse his penalty miss at all.
Nothing. Nothing in the world excuses that penalty.
Yeah, I get your point that because we're Arsenal fans, we tend to watch our own team under a microscope, as it were.
Yes.
And then we do not we expect our players to be faultless and always score every chance they are given. Yes, but
exactly.
Still, it's only logical that you expect the best from your
own players. Okay. Overall, we are fifth in the Premier League as of when we're recording. I don't think the Chelsea game, which is currently going on, has any effect on our position. It doesn't.
They're
4 points behind us. So we are, by the time this is going to be published, we are fifth in the Premier League behind Manchester United. We are just behind by a point, I think. And we have qualified for the next round of the Europa League. We're going to play Rennes. How's that pronounced? Rennes. Okay, great. So that's just the roundup of where we are currently as a team. We will go into the nitty-gritty of the pod. And the first thing I want us to talk about is we have improved in February. February is the amount of the goals that we have scored and the way we have played in February. In comparison to the last 2 months, say December and January, massive improvements have been made. I was going to ask you, Emmanuel, how impressed are you with Arsenal's performances in February? Hi, Iman.
Iman's left.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Why would try to get him back on? Toby, can you just go on? How impressed are you?
I'll say slightly impressed. I think the most impressive has been our defending. Maybe it's a coincidence, maybe it's a fact that they return or playing Socrates and Koscielny almost all through the month.
Yeah.
That seemed to help our defense, or maybe the team finally understanding far more about what the coach wants. But we could say that our team has improved. If it's only the defense, the attack is still fine as well. And then, but I could say I'm slightly impressed by it. Of course, they could always do more.
Yeah, sure. So
the results have been encouraging.
From when we played Bate, we only considered two goals: one against Bournemouth and the one against Spurs, which shouldn't really have considered. So I agree with you that we've improved in defense, and I think it's really important our improvement in defense, because if you look at how the stats match up, Tottenham have scored only 56 goals, we have scored 61, but Tottenham concedes one goal per match, and we concede 1.3. So we concede more than them, obviously. Yeah, okay. And that's the problem as well. Liverpool have scored only 3 goals more than us as at the time of recording.
Mm-hmm.
But we concede at least 2 goals in a game, and they concede 0.5. And ours is 1.3. So improvement in defense is really critical if Unai Emery is going to have to make any overall... meet his overall objectives for the season. Ima, are you back on?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, great, Ima. So we're just talking about improvements of how Arsenal has improved in February. And I'm going to ask you, do you think that we're seeing more of how Unai Emery wants us to play now? Or you want to give credit to... How much credit do you want to give to Unai Emery and the improved performances that we're seeing? That's the question I want to ask.
Okay. Again, if we give Emery some stick in the last podcast over how he managed his team, it's also only fair that we give him credit for the improvement that has happened in February. There is a school of thought that said that the return of Mkhitaryan from injury had helped greatly. So he has an option wide to the right. I agree with that also. However, ever since he finally came to terms with the fact that he needed the duo of Ramsey and Ozil, and he has fashioned a way to use them alternatively. I think some point we will talk about partnership.
Yes.
One, he seems to have understood the importance of a central attacking midfielder to his team, the team seemed to be more balanced. And you know, like we pointed out in the last two podcasts, Arsenal is not really a great defensive team, and the stats are showing that. However, if you look at the stats again, we have the second highest chance created behind only Man City.
Yeah.
And so it's important to know that we've created more goal scoring chances than Liverpool, which many people will find difficult to believe, but that's the truth. We've created more goal scoring chances with Liverpool. And this is a team that has managed to shut out their two most creative players in Ozil and Ramsey. So that says where our strength lies. And he seemed to have discovered that. And then we are motoring. You know, I like to go back a little bit to the game, which is not only in February against Spurs, and you see that game gives you a good idea of what Emery wants to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the game against Spurs
gives you a very good idea of what Emery wants to do. So he comes at every game, he studies opponents, and then he tries to neutralize them. If the linesman had not gone on leave at that point in time, Tottenham would have finished that game without scoring a goal. The only chance they had to score a goal was when Leno pulled off those two double saves in the second. Aside that, Arsenal was not really under any threat. So you understand, he got it absolutely right again, and which is not a rarity. And so I need to give him a whole lot of credit. I saw the game against Pete Borisov, I saw the game against Bournemouth, and then gradually, the team is beginning to take shape. So, sitting from here, I can tell critically, that positions that are very critical to Emery, are his fullbacks.
Yeah.
The two and the three. His central defensive pair, his central midfield pairing.
Yeah.
And then his wide areas.
Yeah.
They are very critical to him. And that is why, despite the fact that he does not have so much end product, you realize that Iwobi is playing every game because he is one man who can stay wide, who can provide width, who has got trickery, who could put pressure on the opposition. You see, Mkhitaryan, he keeps running, although sometimes the final balls are in there, but you know he will keep running in, be cut in, and then create space for the fullbacks to come in and serve as wingers. So I do agree with those who say that Emery's ideas are beginning to take shape. It's very easy. Something funny happened with me yesterday after the game against Spurs. I was so pissed.
Okay.
Then I sat down and just off head, I dropped a transfer list for Emery. And when I was done with my transfer list, it was very funny that I had only one centre back on my list. Only one centre back.
Okay, why is that?
I didn't see much of a problem. So I had another centre back. I wanted to trade for Mustafi, but I had.
I was hoping to keep Mustafi's name out of this podcast.
I'm sorry. I had four fullbacks. I had four wingers. I had two attacking mid.
All to buy.
Then it dawned on me that already, and when I watched that game again against Spurs, I again realized that those are the areas that need to start tweaking to get in the ideas. You understand? So I'm happy with what I've seen so far. I do not think, again, Liverpool is so far away from us. I'm not thinking about so far away from us. I don't think Tottenham is better than we are. So I'm happy. And like, thank God Mo is not here to hear me say this. I'm happy with what Emery is doing.
Yeah, exactly. I'm really, it's clear. You can see now that how much effect that injuries that occurred during the earlier part of the mid part of the season had on his style of play. But just to more critically, Damola, if you can hear me, I was, and this is what I like to, because I like to learn from Emery, and I tweeted before the game at Spurs that my attitude going forward is I want to learn how he thinks. I'm interested in in learning how he reacts. So I tried to put to create scenarios and to guess what he will do, not from a criticism perspective, but to see if he thinks the way I think he thinks. So this is the question actually. Mkhitaryan came back, and then we now started having an option to play down the right, which obviously had a great effect in our game, because prior to his return, we depended on Kolasinac and Iwobi for all our cutbacks and all the opportunities that we had. So now Arsenal can spread the ball a lot better, and the fact that Mkhitaryan can score is an added advantage. However, what we've also seen Unai Emery do, especially in the last three games, is he's alternating the use of Ramsey and Ozil, which many people have actually called for in the past, where we say the grounds against him was the fact that we were not creating a lot of chances and we had two creative players on the bench. So if we didn't have Ramsey and Ozil, or Ozil rather, on the pitch, do you think our performances would have been as good as they've been with just Mkhitaryan joining the squad? How do you think that would have played out?
So I don't think that improvement that we've seen in the last 3-4 games would have been that evident without somebody with a bit of panache in that number 10 position. Reason being that Emery likes about him is that it seems like ball carriers. It seems to like players that can run. Mm-hmm. Players that can run with the ball. So, which is why I feel he's so into even though Iwobi's end product can be shady at times, that is why he likes him, because he can hold and advance on the pitch 10, 20 meters. So the thing is that, no, I feel like if he was still using his three holding midfielders, even with the introduction of Mkhitaryan, I do not think that this improvement that we've seen recently, I do not think that you would have seen it. So I don't know if there was a correlation between him leaving Ozil out, and because I don't know if I'm trying to see if there's a correlation between when he started dropping Ozil and when Mkhitaryan got injured. Because it felt like in one fell swoop, we lost both of our creative outlets, both of our most creative outlets. I do not agree that Ramsey is one of our most creative outlets. I'm sorry. I know that he had a lot of quality, but I do not agree that he's one of our most creative outlets. But I'm trying to see. I don't understand. I don't understand if he lost Mkhitaryan and decided that, okay, yes, Mkhitaryan and Ozil work well together. So now that I've lost Mkhitaryan, I'm going to bench Ozil. But the impact we are seeing from the team now won't have been so apparent if he hadn't
let me come in here and let me add something. So I'm going to take us a mental trip back to our last two games against Spurs and against Bournemouth. So let me start with the most recent, which you cannot remember. Now, I want all of us to play back the Ramsey goal. It was a swift counter. Mm-hmm. But I want us to pause from the moment Xhaka got the ball to play that long pass, that direct pass. If you notice, immediately Xhaka got the ball, he will be made a run down the left.
Yes.
And Mkhitaryan was already making a run right the white, right hand side. Now, there was, I remember his name, David Sanchez, around the same position where you had Ramsey. But David Sanchez is a central defender. So his first instinct was to run towards Lacazette.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, Lacazette got both Sanchez and Wayama together and could slide in the attacking midfielder, who would always be free. So you're either chasing after the center strikers or the wing backs, giving so much room for the guy in the middle. So the guy in the middle could either have room to make passes, make runs, come alleviate, and then rotate the ball again. Now, when you have three flat defensive midfielders, that space is gapping. So you alienate the striker. Lacazette could maneuver and make a pass because there was somebody who would make a run. Now, again, if you play back the game against Bournemouth, you realize that all through the game, Ozil was either always finding spaces, or Mkhitaryan was always finding spaces. So because Now you have three people up front who are always making runs, intelligent runs behind defenses. Defenders are chasing people around. And the defensive midfielder will also drag back to chase. So your attacking midfielder is always finding spaces.
Yeah.
Against Bed Borisov, the same thing happened. So the point is that
you would I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you would notice it again when Ozil came in with Aubameyang against Southampton, and he created three chances right there.
Arsenal should have beaten, should have scored five goals against Southampton.
Yeah. So yeah, like your thought as well. Yes.
So my point is that yeah, the injury to Mkhitaryan was very 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 harmful. And again, I think one of the worst injuries also we've had is the injury back to back to Bellerin.
Yeah.
But again, and that was why in this podcast we sometimes people were critical of Emery, that at that point we needed to look at what is the best we can do with what we had. I think the ostracism of Ozil and Ramsey, Aaron Hill, and let me add this, Damola, Ramsey has the highest chance creation for Arsenal this season. It's crazy. And Ozil comes second. Ramsey has had the highest number of assists for Arsenal this season.
So, you see, I like how people try to tie creativity to assists. I'm sorry, sir. They don't mean the same thing.
Hold on.
Bellerin had more assists for Arsenal. Is Bellerin a creative player?
Now, that when you have... Ramsey is not the most talented player you have in the team. No, he's not. But when you have Ramsey in the team, your chance of scoring goals are higher than when you have, Ida, Guendouzi, Xhaka, or Torreira playing that role. So if Ozil is for tactical reasons, is not playing, then the second best, Ramsey, should play.
No argument here. My argument has never been whether if you listen to the last podcast, you were not available to record. I have a problem with three defensive midfielders. I believe three defensive midfielders anywhere, abroad. It doesn't matter if you are the venue.
Hi, Damola. Am I the only one who's not really hearing Damola? Like, he's always
breaking. I can't hear him.
He's breaking up.
His low line is doing the gloating.
Oh.
Can you hear me now?
We can hear you, but you just ruled out the fact that I wrote the memo. I wrote a sponsorship request to Glow, and now you just.
No, you cut that part out.
I've had my Glow line since 2004. So if just for me, Glow will consider Canon sponsoring this sponsoring Canon just
on my if you're listening, Glow man, we really love you. go on, yeah.
Okay, yeah, so as I was saying, I would normally not play. See, there's some certain games where I agree that Ramsey can work as a 10. One of that game, yes.
Damola, are you here? Oh, we seem to have lost Damola. If he comes back on, then we can get a reaction to what his reaction to Ima's position on the subject. I think we're talking about Ramsey. Just to move on from our improved performances, I'm really, really sad that Mo can't be here, because Mo has, on the last two pods, Mo has continually found a way to
now find a way.
Okay. And in the month when Unai Emery deserves like 120% of the praise, he's not here to feature. But I'm sure we'll do a good job of holding forth for him. I just want to move on to something else that I've seen that Unai Emery does is partnerships. And I don't think you guys are free to disagree, but I think that there's a huge case for how Unai plays and how he selects his team. He does this thing where if you see Lacazette
playing alone, he plays with Ramsey. That's what happened against Southampton. I think it happened in another game that I can't particularly remember. What I'm now beginning to see is when Aubameyang plays, Ozil plays. And that's how they both came in against Spurs, and then they both started the game against Bournemouth, I think, and they both came in together against Southampton. Then obviously there's the connection between Iwobi and Lacazette. Are we seeing like a form of selection where Unai Emery is focusing on people that work together, not just individuals that he thinks he wants to select for that particular game? Do you think that that's what we're seeing?
Yeah, I think we're lucky to be blessed with two fantastic strikers who, while they're excellent strikers, they're also very different in their own way. Lacazette is the typical centre forward, you know, hold up play, put people into play, you know, can also play with people and get. But Aubameyang is the other side, is the, you know, goal hanger, back of defender, you know, always looking for the pass. So it makes sense for him to pair with someone who would complement each striker.
Yeah,
he would always want a more physical presence to help him out, particularly if you are playing against teams who would want to be physical. So when you're playing Lacazette as a physical center forward, you need someone else, you know, particularly when you're playing defensive and you want to counter attack, which will involve a lot of pressing, which both of them are excellent with, Lacazette and Ramsey. But if you are playing a slightly different game where you want a lot of movement around the box, you want to create a chance, you want speed, turn easily, it makes more sense to play Aubameyang and Ozil. You know, Aubameyang to make the runs, Ozil to find the runs. So yeah. I think it makes sense in that way to play the players who would complement each other. Yes, and not just individual players. I think, and we know Emery for being as tactically flexible as possible.
So,
I think it makes sense for that to happen.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I'm going to just keep watching to see if that trend continues, and that's part of the whole learning how Unai Emery thinks as well. How much of Ima, I'm going to ask you this question is for you, Ima. How much of the way? Oh, really? So okay, let's go with you. Let's continue with you, Toby. So how much of the way the formation that we play? Because what's one of the most interesting things about Arsenal is everybody has an opinion on the formation before the game starts and everything. It's a mini chaos that everybody just has, which is fine. Because everybody's just trying to understand your manager. I don't really have a huge problem with it as long as it's not overcritical of the formation that you have not seen. How much of Unai Emery's decision with respect to the formation that he's going to play is hinged on Aubameyang and Lacazette alone? So do we play 3-5-2 because he wants to play both of them? Or do we play 3-4-3 or do we play a 4-3-3 primarily just because of them? Is that a good thing? No, the first question is that a good thing that accommodating both of them seems to be the fulcrum of how we approach a game. What do you think about that?
It's difficult to know exactly because not only does it make a lot of changes in the top third of the team, there are also a lot of changes in the midfield and in defense. So it might be difficult to know exactly what his thinking was or is match by match as regards to whether he's building his team based on whatever in midfield and defense. There are also so many other changes that he usually likes making. So you cannot say exactly if he's going to build his team around whether Aubameyang starts or whether Lacazette starts. I think he always looks for ways to, first of all, nullify the opponent, which is why sometimes he has been accused of being defensive or reactive. But I think his first thought is usually, okay, how can I stop these people, both in midfield and defense? Then he would trust on the attackers I have. I can, maybe the midfield can create chances for the attackers, or we can find a way to score or whatever. So I think he first thinks about that, how he can nullify the opponent. Yeah. So if it means playing a pressing game, if it means sitting deep and low block and everything, so I think that's what he wants to do first.
Yeah, but what I've noticed now is
that criticism of him being conservative actually was born out of the fact that he would play a three at the yes. back and then midfielders, even if they are not in a defensive role. And Ima, that's the question that I've always wanted to ask. I don't have the answer to it. I don't even have an idea around it. But am I the only one who thinks Torreira's role has changed somewhat from the Torreira that we saw at the start of the season? And when the Torreira that we got introduced to as from Uruguay at watching the World Cup, and we're told about it, and from Sampdoria, was somebody was sitting like a DM, was intercepting, was tackling. When he came to Arsenal and started getting introduced to the team as well, that was the role that he was performing. And he seems to be somewhat different now. Do you have any thinking around why Unai Emery is playing him that way?
Okay, so I don't think you're the only one who have noticed that switch. I think he has been pushed somewhat a little bit forward, but to the right, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. He's been canted, sort of.
Exactly. Yeah, canted, yeah. I see more. So it also appears again that when he's playing with Granit Xhaka, he sits, Granit Xhaka sits deeper, and then he...
Which actually confuses me, really. Because that was the criticism we had of Arsene Wenger last season. Granit Xhaka is not really suited to a defensive midfield role. And then we finally signed a very good defensive midfielder, and Granit Xhaka still seems to be like the deepest of both of them. So that's where I get confused, and I really can't wrap my head around it.
Okay, so again, what is Granit Xhaka's natural position? Deep line midfielder. So Granit Xhaka is like Jorginho. That is a natural position. Now, the biggest challenge you have with Xhaka is that Xhaka is like Jorginho. He is not mobile.
Yeah.
Although he's more physical, but he's not mobile. And because whenever he's pressed high, he then resorts to rash tackles.
Yeah.
To get out of it. Now, what you see now is you have a Torreira who is like the Kante, who is playing slightly off him. So the work rate is there. When Xhaka is playing with Guendouzi, Guendouzi sits deeper than Xhaka.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You've noticed it? Guendouzi is deeper than Xhaka. And then Guendouzi does that role. So
Does it? Guendouzi actually does a lot of driving and carrying the ball all around somewhat. And it's hard to actually understand Guendouzi because he's in a lot of places. So
that is his strength. And that is his weakness. You know, again, I remember that report by Sven Mislintat about when he saw Guendouzi.
Yeah.
And then his biggest weakness was that he lacks positional discipline. Mm. And every time I've watched Guendouzi, I see that report. Is that he lacks positional discipline. So it's sometimes it's difficult for you to peg him as to, dude, what really is your role in this team? Because he's almost everywhere. He's in defense, he's in attack, he's in the midfield.
I'm sorry to do that, but when we say he lacks positional discipline, it's on the coach to make sure that he is positionally disciplined. If we see it, the coach sees it, then isn't maybe the fact that his ability to he has lungs that he can run around the pitch and he carries the ball very well and he can drive the team, that is the attribute that the coach actually wants to emphasize, rather than him sitting in a structured traditional midfield role, if you get the point I'm trying to make. It's like when people say Ramsey lacks positional discipline because he always drives forward and is more forward thinking and he wants to get into the box. How do we even know if that's what the coach the attribute that the coach wants him to highlight? Mm-hmm. So we're watching from outside and saying, because we're looking at football from a structural perspective of a 4-2-3-1, 3-4-3, and we expect that somebody who's playing this particular role should sit here. But this person who is supposed to sit here has an attribute that can help the team going forward. And the coach wants to highlight that. Maybe that's the perspective that we should be looking at it from. That's the point I'm trying to make.
I think you've lost Ima.
Hello?
Yeah, so Ima. Okay.
Sir,
did you get the point I was trying to make?
Yeah, I get your question. Let me play more here. I understand that part, But again, we need to understand that this thing—it's not like a light box switch where you put on and off. So positional discipline was off.
Yeah.
And then the guy is—it's not like FIFA 18 or FIFA 19. These things take time to get in. Again, unfortunately, again I keep saying, Guendouzi was thrown into the deep end. Players like Guendouzi should have been blooded in gradually. But he was trained to the deep end. So he has to learn on the job. And the one thing I have done recently was to go back and watch Guendouzi's first game against Man City.
Okay.
And the second game against Chelsea. And then play it back against the Guendouzi I see now. And there's so much difference. So much difference. Now, he times his tackle better now. And then he does, because he knows tackles are not his biggest strength. Now, what he does is to harass his opponents into making other choices, except for passing the ball behind him. So he tends to have improved in those areas. And doing that also intends an improvement in positional discipline. So he begins to read his opponent's mind and know, okay, this is where you're going to. And he forms a wall right there, and then he makes you take a different option. And so I think he's improving.
Obviously.
Guys like Xhaka and Torreira have got years of experience behind them. And they've gone a whole lot ahead of him. But what I find interesting is that Emery seems to have agreed that there's one constant player, Xhaka. Xhaka seems to be the constant player. And then
I actually think the three of them just get rotated so much. I don't really care.
He does not do a lot of Guendouzi Torreira. Unless he doesn't have a choice than to play both. But he does not do a lot of Guendouzi Torreira. He does a lot of Torreira, Xhaka, Guendouzi. So in games where he wants to have absolute control, he does Xhaka, Guendouzi. Because both people love to hold the ball and then slowly build around. Games where he wants to hit you on the break quickly, he does a whole lot of Torreira. So you saw in that game, second half against Tottenham, he wanted to sit deep and then quick breaks. She took out Guendouzi, brought into Torreira, and the idea was win the ball and then you turn it quickly going forward. So like I said, it's taking time, but I'm beginning to see. You know, like when I read your tweet yesterday, I started playing back. I'm going to see those partnerships are taking shape. Even in the center defense, it looks like it is Socrates Koscielny. That two, which we all thought at the beginning of the season was going to be the partnership, seems to have taken shape. Again, he's beginning to say Morel and as his preferred left full back. If he's again, he wants to play pushing forward, it is Kolasinac and it will be up there. I think his preferred in the right has well, it's going to be Bellerin and Mkhitaryan. Without Bellerin available, he's lost as to who wants to do with that. I think that's the one position he has not said what he needs to do with that position, the right full back position. Going forward, again, I'm happy he has dropped the. About my young Lacazette thing, it was good while it lasted, but it wasn't helping team shape.
That's what I was trying to ask Toby earlier on the Aubameyang Lacazette thing. It's sort of like a blessing and a curse at the same time, but more of a blessing, especially because it's a different thing if you have two out and out number nines, like they're playing number nines and they do the same thing, they play in the same way. They are complete opposites of each other. Like they occupy the same position and they play it in completely different ways. So having both of them on the pitch, that mentality just seems to clash. And I'm not sure it's as productive as when only one of them is there. However, both of them are extremely talented players that you want to ensure that they're happy. Two, they are productive, and then three, the team plays to the team plays in a way that further highlights their abilities. Mm-hmm. So, the question I want to ask is, because of their friendship, do you think it makes it harder or easier for Unai Emery to pick one over the other? How do you think that friendship, that very public friendship, plays out in the mind of the manager when he's picking one over? Is it just? And that's the question. That's the question. Please don't forget the question, in case I don't remember the way I've asked it. Because the second question I didn't want to ask, which I'm afraid I might forget because I didn't have this down in my notes, is when you might want to speak to this when Toby's done answering the first one. When he takes out one for the other, does he do it because he's trying to share minutes, or he does it because he's trying to change tactics in the game? So, Toby, you go first, then Ima just answers the next one.
Well, the public friendship is a good thing. In that,
yeah, it is.
On the few occasions where they've had to play together, maybe we are chasing a game or looking for a goal, they
seem try to help
to
each
be
other.
Able to look for each other, and it's good.
Yeah.
Yes. But I don't think a Premier League coach or a coach of Emery's caliber would be worried about their friendship when deciding on which player to play, as it were. He would always want to look at, what do I want to do in this game? Which player is better suited? I think it's more of a blessing than a curse that we have two. I know many teams in the league would kill to even have one of these strikers.
Yeah,
many
I agree.
Top six teams who do not have this kind of strikers that we have. So, vastly different, vastly talented. So I think it's more of a blessing. Yeah. I don't even think it's that much of a curse. You can always adapt our playing styles depending on the abilities of each striker. So I don't think the coach would care about their public friendship when he's choosing a player.
Okay. I was just checking on PremierLeagues.com, and if they have one thing they share together, is the fact that they actually do miss a lot of big chances.
Yes, they miss a fair bit. So
exactly, Aubameyang leads the whole league with 19 big chance misses. Gabriel Jesus is next with 13, and then where is he on the list? Lacazette is sixth with 11. So, yes. So they do miss a fair bit of chances. Yeah.
What?
You say
they may test the big chances between them.
Yeah.
Very, very. So Ima, you can answer your question now.
So again, following from what Toby said, like he said, I really don't think Emery's substitutions of one for the other or keeping one on the bench for the other in games has anything to do with sharing minutes. The one thing Emery has shown us is that he's a sadist when it comes to his decisions. He's not interested in your smile. All he's interested in is his status. so when I say he's a sadist, it's not in a bad way. Emery, when that came with the father figure thing, Emery should have come with the businessman thing. So I'm here to get results, and that's it. Yeah. So after we get the results, then we can go hug. At the end of the day, in fact, it's not even a hugger. So the game ends, walks away like Wenger walks away to the dressing room, and the rest of them.
Yeah.
So that said, going from what Toby said earlier, I think what Emery has shown over time is he looks at the game and then see which suits. The playing of Aubameyang and Lacazette together, I think, came about after the injury to Mkhitaryan, where he now was forced to play one of them wide. Remember, lost Welbeck at the beginning of the season. Now we've lost Mkhitaryan, so he didn't have the option wild. If I believe strongly that if both Welbeck and Mkhitaryan were fully fit, there are absolutely no way in the world he would play both Aubameyang and Lacazette together, unless it's a game probably we are chasing, and then he's throwing everything into the sink at the same time, which is always a rarity. Now, like I said, February reminds us clearly of again what Emery has been trying to do. So, like I think it was Toby that said this earlier on, in games where the games are tight and physical, compact, he prefers to play Lacazette. Now, Lacazette is strong on the ball. He's also good with the ball on his feet. He could make better passes than Aubameyang. Aubameyang is not that guy it's not the guy you want in who drops deep to collect the ball and make passes. Mm-hmm. He's always making the wrong passes.
No, Aubameyang's strength lies in that goal he scored against Bournemouth. That's where his strength is.
Yeah.
That's where his strength is. He runs and he expects you to play the ball behind the defense in front of him. Once that is done, yeah, touch correct, you're done. You're done. The chances that you get him is nowhere. So Emery, that is where Emery knows he thrives. Now Emery also understands that is where Ozil thrives. Those games where oppositions are not pressing high, physical hitting, where they are trying to do the zonal marking, mark spaces, and Ozil will unlock you. Mm-hmm. All it takes is one touch, he looks up, and then you're done. Mm-hmm. So he understands that part. Ramsey wants to run into a brick wall. Mm-hmm. Ramsey is that guy who wants, he sees a brick wall, he runs through it. Lacazette believes he has some Johan Cruyff thing inside him, so he can turn around everybody. And then, so he seems to understand how that works, and then he's doing that. And I perfectly understand. It wasn't difficult for me to understand when Ramsey was not in the team against Bournemouth. I knew Ramsey was going to start against Tottenham. He was most suited for that game. And Lacazette was going to start against Tottenham, most suited for that game. Actually, wish Lacazette had finished the game. Because I think that's going to happen out here. Now, again, that game.
I'm sorry. But that's the reason why I asked that question. Mm. Because from a tactical perspective, I didn't see any reason why he was taking out Lacazette. I couldn't accept the fact that Lacazette should have finished that thing.
There's something that Emery does sometimes that he wants to always give the opposing defense a different look. Okay, they've played Lacazette. They've played against Lacazette for 60 minutes, 65 minutes. Let's give them something else to deal with. As we have two vastly different strikers, it might profit us to sometimes, mix something up. Like I said, I've been playing well, quite well, but he has been missing chances, he has not been doing the right things. Let's try something else, which is why I brought in Aubameyang and Ozil to give them something different to look at. Penalty that Aubameyang got, I do not think, like I said, would have made that same run. You get? That, like I said,
yeah, he wouldn't have gotten there to start.
He wouldn't
with
have gotten there because you saw how many chances Aubameyang had when we broke.
Yeah.
Like two or three times he broke free, and with a better with a better pass, he would have gone.
There was one. Mustafi found him, which he should have done better with.
Yeah. But like I said, can't make that kind of so, run because it's not his game. So I think it's about giving the defense something else to look at.
I think again,
it's more tactical than changing personnel. Basically, that substitution of Aubameyang came in after Pochettino took out Wayama for Lamela.
Yeah.
So he took out Wayama, brought in Lamela. Lamela is an attacking player, of course. Now he brought in Sissoko. He brought Sissoko to play as a DM. So there was space. And then, so what Emery responded by bringing in Jan Ozil, who would just occupy that space that Wayama has vacated.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in doing that, because Soko is more attracted to going forward, what Pochettino had done was to push his team forward. So, what's his name? Danny Rose was no longer playing as a conventional three. He was now playing more in the middle.
In
the midfield. So, he has switched his team. Now, he has spread his defense to a real three at the back. And had five midfielders.
Mm-hmm.
So it gave room for Aubameyang, who was faster, to make. So Aubameyang had, in that game, he had three clear runs at goal.
Yes.
Clear runs at goal.
Yeah.
Two, he fluffed.
Yeah, so it was right.
Two, he fluffed his first touch. And then the third one, he got a penalty. I think the fourth one, he got the penalty. So you understand the thinking behind those decisions. You understand the thinking behind those decisions. In the first half, we wanted to play our way into that goal, and we did. Like I said, fluff chances. By the first half, we should have been out of sight by the first half.
Yeah.
By the first half.
Oh my goodness. That chance where he turned and then the ball just went.
You understand. So, like I said, again, I think one other thing that we play in Emery's head is like I said, is hot headed. Every time he's taken out, even if he's taken out in the 89th minute, he's almost crying. He's throwing tantrums. He's petulant.
Yeah.
So again, that plays. you do not want to lose those players. Well, unless you have somebody, you know, going to pay crazy money for Lacazette, then. But until then, you want to keep those players happy. Yeah. I'm sure again, Lacazette does not like it. I'm sure he does not like the fact that Aubameyang is way, way ahead of him in number of goals scored. So he would want to close in that gap. You understand? So, again, he has a positive, he has a negative. The hunger is good. We love it. So he play more. But again, practically, this is one of the places where I say Emery has got it absolutely spot on in his choice as to when to play Aubameyang or Lacazette. Okay. I agree with him totally with this one.
Oh, okay, great. And I think we've done like a good job of having that discussion on this subject. So quick break, and when we come back, we will talk about Unai Emery and how he rotates his team very briefly. Quick break.
Just cause. Go. Johnny come, Johnny go, Johnny just completing youth service, passing out.
All right, and we are back. Just on the subject of how Unai Emery is continually improving Arsenal, as we can see during his performances in February. I'd like to get your thoughts as well on how he rotates his team. Is Unai Emery like a manager that thrives with a bigger squad? Than like Jose Mourinho in his first season at Chelsea when he won the league. I think he pretty much won the league with like 16 players, just playing the same people all the time. Unai Emery is someone who seems he's like someone who enjoys having a big squad and wants to use them. How do you marry? Do you think we can be successful with that kind of attribute, given that players are continually trying to adjust to each other when they play on the pitch?
The question you sent across, you referred him to the famous Rafa the Rotator, and
Rafa Benitez.
I agree. The Tinkerman. There are two sides to it. There's a side which you have come with like a fear that you constantly have players trying to get used to each other. There's advantage that comes from playing the same sort of players over and over again. Like Chelsea did under Mourinho, like Ranieri did with Leicester, and then they seem to have they seem to become telepathic, and then they are it's easy for them to
they
gel.
Just know where to be to gel. Yeah.
The sad part of that is when people who are critical in that team get injured, everything falls apart. Because the other person who comes in new is alien. He has not been in the setup, and then you could have that risk. The positive side of having a large squad and using all of them is that it's difficult for your opponent to pin you down.
Yeah.
It's difficult for your opponent. If Emery does not have a big squad, he has a small squad right now, which is working on. But even with a small squad, it's difficult for each and every one of us to accurately predict what Arsenal is turning up for this game. So I'm sure there's very few of us saw the Mustafi as a right full back coming against.
Yeah, exactly. That's a case in point. Exactly.
Especially when you had Midland Knight's feet, Jenkinson feet.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So none of us saw that coming, but he came up with that. So sometimes it has a way of working against your position. So even if as an opposing manager you get the information that morning or the night before, you've already prepared your team the way you want to set up, and then you start adjusting again. So it's beautiful. And what I like the most about him is that he reacts quickly.
He does.
So, the first 30 minutes to 45 minutes, he tries to see what is it that these guys are doing. So probably what my plans for these guys aren't what they're turning up with. So I plan for them to play like A, and they're playing like E, and then in 45 minutes he changes. Mm-hmm. Mm. And then so that it's you need a big squad to be able to do all of that. I do see it as a point, and it's a welcome relief. If we are moving away from the Wenger era, the Wenger era is the era where everybody knew what Arsenal team
is going to come out. Everybody knew the way the team was going to play. The problem is, do you have an antidote to that thing? If you have an antidote to the team, you will smash the team. If you don't have an antidote to the team will smash you. That has always been Arsenal. It's always been that way. But right now, it's always... Every time Emery makes a substitution, you're beginning to ask, okay, what is he trying to do here? And it takes everyone else about 5-10 minutes to understand, okay, this is what he's trying to do.
To figure it out.
This is what he's trying to do.
I find that very interesting as well.
He switches formations. So without even making a substitution, he switches formation and then just look at, oh, no, this guy used to be here. What's he doing here now? What's he doing here? Oh, he has changed. That's information. So I find that interesting. I find that exciting. And again, I think I look at so many games and I think he has won so many games from doing all those tactical changes, personnel changes, formation changes before, during, after, towards the end of the game. And it's really, really good. It's, in my opinion, is really good.
I agree. But
if it works for him, then it's fine.
You could say this because we've had a good month. I think Unai Emery has always continually tinkered with his formations in the game. And when it doesn't come out right, when we don't win the game or when we don't play particularly well, then we begin to criticize him. Now he's doing it and we're winning. We are giving him the plaudits for it. So I think as a fan base, we as well have a lot of learning to do that. That the manager, this is the character of the manager. And then when we look at it from the perspective of this is who he is, rather than this is who we want him to be or this is what we think he should be, then we can accommodate it when it works and when it doesn't work. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Absolutely, Simon. And then sorry again to come in again. You know, I say Emery and Sarri are worse at opposite. Sarri is still on his ways that this is the way I want to play, and I will do this or die trying. And you know, again, I say some criticism Sarri has got has been unfair because Chelsea are sixth on the, I don't know, they should be fifth now on the table if they won today. I don't know. I don't know the result right now.
No. They'll be sixth where they will always be.
They will sixth and they have a game on hand. So they've not done badly.
They
have been in the same position like Arsenal, like Man U, even like Tottenham. But he has been getting stick because he is the man who says, this is the way I want my team to play, and he stays that way. That was the way Conte won the league. Conte won the league playing this same kind of football. 3-5-2 is the way I want to play, and that's the way he plays. You understand? Other managers, Pep does not tinker much with his formation, but he's always thinking with his personnel.
Yeah.
He's always thinking with his personnel. And then so you realize, okay, I saw the game against Chelsea and Silva wasn't playing. I was like, wow, who goes to play a big game and David Silva is not playing? But he can afford to play because he has a big squad. And his philosophy needs a big squad. So like you said, a whole lot of us need to trust Emery. And I think it's coming from a place where almost every Arsenal fan have only seen Wenger as the Arsenal manager. And we're used to that. So much, even when we wanted a change, we were not ready mentally for that change. So Emery has brought the change. It's going to take a time to blend in. Yes, he deserves all the criticism he gets when he gets things wrong. But again, like Mo will always say, he has also earned the right to be trusted to develop that thing he has in his head. And if you have even an average football mind, you can see what he is trying to do. For me, it is the biggest plus or problem. That was the problem I had with Mourinho. I keep telling Man U fans, I watched Man U for over 2 seasons. I couldn't figure out what Mourinho was trying to do with Man U. I have watched Emery for half of a season. I know what he's trying to do. I can see what he's trying to do. And then I can criticize the choices he's made based on my understanding of what he's trying to do. And for that, I think I'm comfortable with that.
Oh, great, great. That's a great, great way to end that conversation as well. I just want to speak on something that bothered me on the back of the Huddersfield game. So I know this is way back in the beginning of the month in February. We won Huddersfield 2-1, but it was a game where we did well in the first half, and we had one of the most terrible second halves that you would ever find. We were completely dominated. I was looking at the stats. Huddersfield at that point had they had 15 clear-cut chances or 15 chances against us. We managed to score Kolasinac, and I think the goal was awarded to someone else. But anyways, we conceded in the game at close to the end of the game, and then Iwobi got a lot of stick, and I think Maitland Niles as well, on the back of their performance in that game, even though Iwobi scored, and I think he had an assist, I'm not sure. So the conversation around, on Twitter was around Iwobi not being Arsenal quality. And then I started to ask myself, I took it too at the point, I was like, that was one of the first questions on the pod. What does it mean for a player to be Arsenal quality? What does it mean when you say a player is Arsenal quality? In your words, let me hear what you have to say about that, Toby.
I think football fans are very fickle, and tend to judge players based on their last performance.
Oh,
I don't believe there's any such thing as being Arsenal quality.
There has to be, surely.
No, what I mean is that if a player comes to the field and he puts on the Arsenal jersey, he's an Arsenal player. Whether or not he's good enough depends on the team he's playing or what his manager wants him to do and how well he can do it. See my point? He doesn't have to be the most skillful player. He doesn't have to be the most talented player. I know we've had this impression in our mind of this. Well, we love our football club, so we always want the best players. And then we always have in our mind, we should buy this player, we should buy that player. No matter how big a team is, no matter how star-studded a team is, there would always be water carriers. You know, they call water carriers.
Those who are
just basically squad players, who are role players to fulfill a role.
John O'Shea.
Who may not be John O'Shea, who are not talented, who you may think you are better than as footballers. But they come into a team, they do the job. So this whole Arsenal quality thing is a weird area. To me, it doesn't exist. There's no such thing as Arsenal quality.
I actually disagree with Toby. But before I disagree with Toby as well. But so Ima, go on. Maybe you'll cover my points as well.
So I do think there is quality. Quality in terms of the talent, the ability of a player, and then the stability of a player. So there are players who are not top six players. So we have top six club in England right now. Top six club in England. There are players who are not top six club players. I know this is not fair, but I off my head, I know Mustafi is not one.
Okay.
So Mustafi could make as a squad player, like a John O'Shea, like a Darren Fletcher, as a squad player. But a player like Mustafi shouldn't be a starting player for a top six team.
No, I agree with you.
Mustafi is a threat to any team that he plays in, whether he starts or he comes in, he's a threat.
Okay, so now that's there. Now again, there is a top class player who does not fit into a team's ideology.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, so you could be a fantastic player, but you don't fit in. So for all the stick, you know, it's interesting that Lukaku is about less than 26 years old, if I'm not mistaken. And he is one of the 20 or 10 highest goal scorers in Premier League.
So
he is a fantastic goal scorer.
I agree.
By the stats.
I agree.
And I do think that he would, Chelsea are the kind of teams he will function well. Pep Guardiola will never, even if Lukaku is scoring 300 goals in one season, he wouldn't play Pep Guardiola because he does not fit into that style. So you could have a world-class player who does not fit into your style. So I can say Lukaku is not a Man City quality. It does not mean Lukaku is not a good player.
Yeah.
Pogba is not a Man City quality. Does not mean Pogba is not a good player, but you do not fit him into that style. Look at the player like Henderson. Look at a player like Henderson playing regularly for Liverpool, being a captain. Henderson is a Liverpool quality player because he suits into what Klopp wants to achieve. Do.
Yes,
the high press, energy,
relentless running.
He fits in into it. Now bring a Henderson to Arsenal or to Man City, you would curse. You would curse whoever signed him because it don't fit in. Because don't account that we're not running here. Look at Coutinho. Coutinho was amazing at Liverpool. He goes to Barcelona. He looks he looks so ordinary. Because he is not a Liverpool. He goes there to run and press and turn and shoot. But no, here we want to play it needs one touch football. They don't shoot here.
I mean, they don't shoot.
Now, if you have taken Coutinho to, he could have fit in better. Do you understand? Thierry Henry was amazing at Arsenal. He was ordinary at Barcelona. He was ordinary at Barcelona. Ordinary. He was just ordinary at Barcelona. Because again, he wants to run, play the ball behind, he slides. No, that wasn't their style. Imagine Cristiano Ronaldo at Barcelona. He ain't gonna work. He ain't gonna work. So so to that extent, that's what I'm saying to be. There are top quality players. And there is a club quality player. Now that said, I do think that some of the abuse some of these players have gotten are absolutely, absolutely demonic. Without any bias that comes from nationality, I do think for now, Iwobi is an Arsenal quality player. For now. We might now make signings and then get better players than Iwobi, and then Iwobi becomes. But for now, Iwobi is an Arsenal quality player. And again, I do think that Arsenal fans are exaggerating Arsenal as a club.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the question. That's the point exactly.
Arsenal podcast. Arsenal is not a top four team.
We don't have a top four squad.
Arsenal is not a top four team, so basically, what we are looking at is a second rate set of players, even in England. So the top rate will go to Manchester and Liverpool, probably Chelsea and Man U because they give the money. So the second rate. So for our level now, Iwobi fits in, and again, week in week out, the young man puts everything into the game.
I think you answered it clearly at some point in your conversation. It doesn't only fit in our level.
Somebody's going to ask me, why do I give Iwobi all this get out of jail card? I don't give Mustafi. And my answer is simple. Iwobi was a young boy that came from our academy to play. We paid 35 million. A poor Arsenal paid 35 million for Mustafi because he's a World Cup winner, regular at Valencia. So, to whom much is given, much more is expected. If Mavropanos makes the kind of blunders Mustafi makes, I'm not going to complain. If Rob Holding makes those kind of blunders, I'm not. So when Rob Holding, Mavropanos don't make those mistakes, and then you, who's supposed to be the leader of the team, make a lot of mistakes, I pull my head out. So that is why I said, I have no apologies. I'm not going to say, I'm not sorry. I'm going to say this. Mustafi is neither a national quality nor a top six quality. I actually think Wenger and Gazidis need to report at EFCC headquarters to explain how they are.
So on the back of that, I think it's a good point that we addressed that subject, because one, I think when we are criticizing a player, we have to check how useful that player is to the manager's strategy and that player's value with respect to where Arsenal is currently as a football club, not what we think that Arsenal is. And I think from that perspective, players like Iwobi and Maitland-Niles are really good players to have around in our squad. We just signed Denis Suarez, and I don't know, guys. I don't know. I've, I'm, I'm usually very excited about new signings. I want them to do well. They're like having a new cousin in your house, you know, that kind of thing. But I struggle to be excited about Denis Suarez because I really don't know what his real skill set is.
Can I make a confession?
Okay.
I totally forgot that we signed him.
No, you. it's possible to forget.
I forgot because it was like a few days ago before the match at this point. I saw the Arsenal official Twitter account saying something about Suarez. I don't remember. Oh, wait. We actually signed Denis Suarez.
Yeah,
completely forgot that we signed
him. Delete yourself.
I swear, I forgot him.
What is his real skill set? Do you have an idea what it is? Because especially if he's coming into a squad that is going to lose Aaron Ramsey, doesn't look good enough to fit that role. I'm sorry, he might come good, but right now I don't think he is.
Okay, I watch a bit of him in Barcelona.
No way is near that quality.
No, let me explain. I watch a bit of him in Barcelona.
Okay.
Mm? When he joined Barcelona, his first few matches was impressive. Then. No, everything fell apart. I don't know why, but it's not.
But it was impressive doing what? That's what I want to learn.
Yes, he's an attacking midfielder. Okay. He can also play on the wing, on the left, on the right. He's skillful. He's a dribbler. He's a passer. He can shoot. He's a good player. Now, whether it will fit in worse now, what Emery said to is a different matter entirely.
Okay.
But I think he's good enough to hold his own. The reason why he hasn't been playing is that. Because he wasn't playing in Barcelona, I don't think he has even played for Barcelona this season. He hasn't started a game for them this season. The reason was why he's not being played is because he hasn't played 90 minutes in a while. So, Emery is trying to manage him.
Doesn't that then put into doubt the thought process behind signing him? My belief is when you're signing someone in January, it's because you've looked at the person and the person can give you the extra push that you need to meet your objective.
Yeah.
If you sign a Kim Kalstrom kind of signing, where you're supposed to still help the person get to the level where the person is fit enough to then help you in the last 2 months, is that a risk that would have drifted at the time?
While it's a loan, the expectation is that this loan will be converted into a permanent transfer. So I don't think the coach is just looking at it now. He's looking at the future. Ramsey would leave, right?
Okay.
He most likely would play in that Ramsey position if Ramsey was to be around. So let's just look at him as being a Ramsey understudy for now. I suspect he would play more games, particularly in the Europa League.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I suspect that's where it'll be used more. I don't know why, but I just feel like that might be the place that is better suited, you know, not as high quality as the Premier League, and maybe the
I have doubts he would even play there because we're talking about an Unai Emery who wasn't comfortable playing youngsters even when we were playing teams like FC Vosca. He approached the Europa League with seriousness from day one.
Yeah, but Suarez is not a youngster now.
Yeah, but Unai Emery seems to be someone who's going to go into a Europa League game with the best possible squad that he can select.
Yes, yes.
Especially now that we're in this.
And if he thinks that Denis Suarez is the person, I just believe we'll see more of him with time. No, you should just match. You still have like 3 months.
Okay.
To the season. Oh, okay.
Okay. So I kind of share your sentiments, Simon. You know, when you sign a player in January, it's supposed to be a ready to go. Because I'm not a manager yet, but my understanding of the January window is supposed to be like quick fix.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is why most managers don't do January transfer. They prefer to do summer, where they could take their time and then blood in players. But January is supposed to quick fix, and so when your quick fix needs to be fixed before.
Exactly.
I understand where you're coming from.
Where your quick fix needs to be fixed before it becomes the fixer kind of thing.
Yeah. So but that said, you know, I've seen flashes of. So I'm not even going to look at what he looks like at Valencia, at Sevilla, at Barcelona. I'm going to look at the few minutes he has played at Arsenal, and.
Mm.
I do think we have someone who would help us towards the business end of the season.
Okay.
One thing we need to look at now is that we're getting to the point where fatigue will set in.
Okay.
Fatigue will really set in. The pressure will get high. Now, with the gap between third and sixth closing to less than 5 points or six points, the pressure is on everybody.
Yeah.
The pressure is on everybody. Now, unfortunately for Suarez, he came in at that point where the pressure is enormous.
Now,
a part of Emery will also be thinking, do I throw him into the deep end? Especially for a guy who has not had so much football. So what Emery has done is to place safe first, the handbrake first. And say, okay, these are the guys who are tested and proven to be able to do the job. They've worked on my philosophy for 6 months. So I'll run with these guys. And if you check our game against Bournemouth, Suarez got about 20 minutes, actually about 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Against Bournemouth. And I saw flashes of things I like.
You did?
Yes, I did. I saw the way he linked up with the guys. I saw the way he was able to switch from left to right. And then he looks like the player who wants the ball. He's always going towards the ball.
Because he's someone who has little time to actually impress. So he needs to find that ball.
So that's good. Now, but again, you also see why he has not been playing so much. Because most times, he is not in sync. Most times, you see he's not in sync. So he's either playing the pass short or he's trying to dribble where his mates are waiting for the ball to pass. So fully, he's not there yet. It would have been amazing if, like, a game against Bates, if we had beaten Bates Borisov 3-0 in the first leg.
Yeah, and then he got a chance to start.
It would have been easier to have given him a run of game in the second leg. If we go to Rennes now, next week, and then we come up with an amazing result, 3-4 goals, the pressure on us is lower coming back home. You can give him a better run.
Yeah.
You go against... Imagine the game against Southampton, if we're taking our chance in the first half and then score 5 goals.
Yeah.
You could give the guy under 25 minutes. And that's how you... Now, if you remember Torreira, we all were clamoring for Torreira to come in, start. But he kept giving Torreira 30 minutes, 25 minutes, 45 minutes. And then Torreira was getting into the team. And the moment he was satisfied that Torreira had fully synced, Torreira became the man. I think we'll see much of Suarez towards March, April, and then the May end. If whatever we see April and May would help us decide, okay, is this the guy? If he's not, no pressure. It was still an option to buy. We don't take the option. If he's the guy, we take the option, and then we'll bring him in. For now, I don't think the jury is out. I don't have an opinion about him at all right now. I'm just cool with him there, and let's see what happens.
I'm very happy to be wrong. So I can leave you guys to go and watch the Liverpool Everton game, which is about to start, which is, I think, is the most needless derby in the world. I can't remember Everton ever winning that game.
They need to get that word derby from that thing.
Well, I don't know what it is.
It makes
really
a mess of derbies.
It's a derby because they're basically across the...
We should not make exception to derbies.
Across the park.
Let's make exception.
You have to be competitive for it to be a
gem.
So just to close, I think given the way the match ended against Spurs, it's now extremely important that we get something out of the Man United game. Is it a must-win game or a must-not-lose to you? Which one is it?
It's definitely a must-win game. There's no way...
Must-win.
We should allow Man United leave Emirates with any sort of points.
Okay.
Yes. No, this is like top four derby, as it were.
The ideal result will have been a win for two reasons. One, they are direct rivals for the top four. Two, Man United needs to lose a game. Like, they need to lose a game. Yeah. They need to lose a game. I don't care against who. They need to lose a game. And if they lose against us, it's a double. It's like 6 points. Yeah. It's like 6 points. So it's a 6 points.
We can lose to them.
But
losing to them is not an option.
To say is a must not lose game. It's a must not lose game. So the worst we can get out of that game is a draw. But the perfect result would have been a win, either way of it. So the win would have been the best. It does two things for you. It helps you take out one of your direct rivals. And then secondly, it throws a spanner in their wheels. And then we begin to see how they react after their first loss. I do hope we win. I don't like making predictions against a Manchester United game. That's never been our favorite fixture. I have this confidence that Arsenal would be in the Champions League next season. I don't know if it's through the top four or through the Europa League, but I do have the confidence that Arsenal would be in the Europa League next season, in the Champions League next season.
Oh, okay. So that's a good place to close. I'm just trying to quickly Google Man United's remaining fixtures. They have to play. Let me see.
I don't think Man United can continue playing like this. They can't keep on winning.
They still have to play Man City at home.
Yes.
Chelsea at home.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty much it. So obviously they lose those two games, right?
Yeah,
and they have so they lose those two games. Hopefully.
No. They shouldn't lose against Chelsea. They should play a draw against Chelsea.
Okay.
Oh, true. I completely forget that Chelsea has a game in hand, which is really terrible, right? Yeah. All right. So it's great recording this again, our third one. I really thank you, Ima and Toby, for your insights as well. Unfortunately, we lost Mastermind during the pod, but thank you, Mastermind. I'm sure you'll be back for the next one. Sadly, we couldn't have Mo today. Mo seems to be like the loudest voice for Unai Emery on the podcast, and in a month where I hope nobody's going to accuse us of muting him. In a month when he's supposed to come on the podcast and tell us, I told you so, trust Unai and everything. But everybody loves Unai now, and obviously we can see that the work that he's putting in is beginning to show some fruits, and we support him on the sport as much as we can. Thank you again to everybody who has taken time to listen. We do not take for granted the fact that, especially if you're listening in Nigeria, that you use data that costs a lot of money to listen to us. We will be back at the end of the month, and we are planning something special for the last pod of the month. So you guys need to listen, and then you might have find a way to join us on that one. So thank you again, Mo, for wherever you are. Thank you, Toby, for coming on.
Thanks.
And thank you, Emmanuel, as well. We will be listening to you on, you can say the radio station again.
Hello?
I said, no, you can say the name of the radio station where you're on Saturdays.
Okay. Lagos Talk 91.3.
Lagos Talk 91.3. Ima talks about everything football on that day. From 12 to 6 p.m., right?
Yes, it is.
So I'm sure it's much better than listening to
TalkSport.
TalkSport is definitely Shy Radio. What's the other guy's name? The sports guy, Tim Sherwood. To be honest, yesterday during the game, there was Tim Sherwood and Tony Adams, and I just went to the room and I couldn't bother listening to them. I felt bad because Tony Adams was there and I wasn't really up to listening to what he was going to say. Then came back to
Adams. It's not that much better. So.
Well, yeah, but Tony Adams is Mr.
You know, it was the great thing was that there were games on in Spanish league and the Italian Serie A.
Yes. Oh, so you just
at halftime I switched over to that and then when it was I came back again.
Okay, I don't feel bad.
I can't start listening to those two.
I don't feel bad anymore. All right. Cheers, guys. Have a great week ahead and a great month as well. Right. Cheers. Bye. Thank you, everybody. Bye. Cheers. So, I really did try to stay away from the whole Mustafi conversation throughout the pod because I couldn't just put into words how angry I was at him with what he did against Spurs and how he's been defending for us now, possibly throughout his whole career. but I think Fouls, the bad guy, the first words you hear in the song that's about to play captures perfectly how angry I am. So the pod ends with Fouls, the bad guy. The name of the song is Johnny. It's off an excellent, excellent album. Enjoy. Again, Mustafi, this is pretty much what I think of.
I'm down. This motherfucking trigger happen, nigga. Just cause unnecessary sorrow for your family shot. All because them no oblige you when you ask for some cash. No fucking threats, no weapons. Just him and his guys in his car. You have the guts to tell me you accidentally discharged. Madman, waka, you be bloody bastard. You waste your life and try to tell me that you sorry after. Trying times and dark days, it's just becoming darker. It's still the same sad story, just another chapter. Johnny drop for Borno, Johnny fight for Plateau. Some blame it on religion, some they fight for Malu. Johnny drop for Lagos cause a foolish man overdue. If Johnny continue to drop, and your melo lo ma coup. And your melo lo ma coup. And your melo lo ma coup.